Hi there, and welcome to this week's episode of your show. My guest today is Brad Mataz. He's the leader of a pro-life movement in the USA. With over 48 years of significant contribution and recognition in the pro-life movement, Brad is widely known in the United States and worldwide for his passion for the sanctity of life, from pre-born to end of life. Currently serving as president of Life Issues Institute, Brad was co-founder of the organization along with pro-life pioneer Dr. John C. Weekly in 1991. The institution's stated purpose over the past 30 years has been to serve the educational needs of the pro-life movement, developing and distributing effective pro-life education materials. Heard on over 1,200 radio outlets nationwide, Brad is commentator for the Daily Life Issues program, which was recognized by National Religious Broadcasters from the 2016 Radio Impact Award. Brad is a family man at heart, and Brad and his wife Ellen have grown four grown sons and five grandchildren. The Montana natives now reside in Florida. Let's go to the interview I had with Brad. Don't go away.
Sweet face.
Hi there, and welcome to this week's episode of the show. I am so excited that I have as my guest a man who has been a warrior for life for decades. He's Brad Mataz. He's the president of the Life Issues Institute in Florida, in the USA. He's presently on a visit to South Africa, where he's talking at the National Alliance for Life conference. And I just kind of thank you so much for giving us this time in the midst of your speech as your keynote address at this conference. Welcome to South Africa.
Thank you. This is my fourth time here, and it feels like coming back home. It is such a joy to be here and an honor to do the interview.
Thank you so much for this. Listen, Brad, you have been in this particular fight for life, fighting against abortion. Your organization has been involved in the forefront of providing educational resources to help this fight for life. And you've been doing this not even when it was so popular. You've been doing this for over 40 years, I believe.
Yes.
Now, I want to go back and say, why is this fight for life, this whole thing against abortion, so important?
To me personally?
To you, why is it important to us as a church? And to you, let's start with you. Why is it important to you?
Well, I have always had a deep and abiding love for babies. So I guess God used that love to counteract the injustice of abortion. Now, my senior year in high school, I did a persuasive speech on abortion, and our grade largely depended upon how many of our fellow class members we persuaded. I picked abortion. I showed the beauty of the unborn child. I showed what abortion does to the baby and the impact it is on the woman. I took a poll before the talk. It was about 50-50. I took a poll after my talk. It was unanimous for life.
Wow.
So I learned early on back in the 1970s that pro-life education is an effective tool to change hearts and minds on abortion.
That's why you picked up this whole career of using pro-life education to change things. For you, in the past 40 years, it must have been so heart-wrenching to see abortion upon abortion institutionalized, laws being institutionalized in your country, in the USA. I was pretty young when we first heard of the Roe versus Wade and all the things that came from that. And where did you get the strength to keep fighting, even when it looked like a losing battle? And I'm asking you this, Brad, because like I said to you before the interview, we're in a place where it's like we're fighting Goliath, and we're not even like David. We're in a country where up to the 12th, 13th week, abortion is allowed without any reason for anybody. It's available in every corner of Durban, for example, and it looks like an insurmountable thing. Where did you get the strength to keep going on? Where did that conviction come from that something could be, a difference could be made?
Well, the 48 years that I was involved in the movement, I hate injustice. Killing innocent unborn babies is the ultimate injustice in America and in South Africa also, because they are defenseless, they are voiceless. So it is a passion that God put on my heart to fight and fight and fight. And there have been times where we have had devastating losses and times where we had joyful victories. And I learned sometimes after a few years, you just need to go off in a room and have a good cry.
And come back to the fight.
And come back to the fight. There are times when we worked so hard to elect a pro-life president and lost.
Wow.
And we wept and mourned for a few days, and then we dusted off our clothes and jumped back into the fight. And we are committed to not end until every unborn baby is protected and welcomed in life. And back in the 70s, it's like where you are today.
Yeah.
Everybody told me, even my own parents who are pro-life.
And waste of time.
Christian. They gently said, you know, you really don't, I don't think you're going to win this. But giving up was not an option.
An option, okay.
Imagine in the days of slavery, if the abolitionists
said there was no way out.
If they had given up, imagine what our country would look like today.
Wow.
It would have been a disaster.
What a good example.
Yes, giving up is not an option. Losing is not an option, because before Roe, 1 million babies were being killed every year.
Okay.
And that has wiped out the entire population of several states since Roe was enacted.
Wow.
So the body count is a reason for motivation. And another one is that the mothers and fathers of these aborted babies that I've talked to are so remorseful and so racked with guilt and grief. That we realize that abortion not only affects the babies, but it affects the parents. And as a result, I counsel fathers who have lost children to abortion.
That's one area you're particularly known for, the effect on fathers, which is something we don't, even among Christians, think too much about. The fact that it's not just the baby that is killed or the mother that is traumatized, but even the father of the baby many times go through trauma. Could you tell us a bit about how you came across this and what happens, what you found that happens to fathers of aborted, who go through abortion?
Sure. Well, we began to get emails in the mid-90s from men who were terribly grieving after abortion. And then I got a handwritten letter that pulled the trigger for me and the passion in my heart to really pursue this aggressively. He wrote about his brother who was living with his girlfriend who became pregnant. He was thrilled she had an abortion. He continued to live with her. She became pregnant again. And this time he looked for a legal recourse to stop her. But the way the laws are written, he couldn't. So she had another abortion. And he severed his relationship with the girlfriend, moved back in with his mother, and lived in the basement, the lower level of the house. And those were red signs. And one day, the mother went to her car in the garage to get in her car for work, and she found her son hanging by the rafters.
Wow. Suicide.
Yes, he had hung himself. And he left a note that said, I can no longer live with the pain of losing my children. They were my children too, and I love them. I hope you'll forgive me. And he signed the suicide note. And at that point, I thought, we need to stand in the gap between Satan and those men who are tempted to commit suicide. We need to reach out to them to show them that the blood of Christ covers all sin, including the sin of abortion, and that there is total and complete forgiveness through the blood of Christ. And when we walk them through that and help them understand that there's good guilt and unhealthy guilt, and help them forgive those who were involved, they become a new man. And it has been absolutely astounding to see the difference in a man when he begins counseling with me to when he ends it. And it's not me doing it. It's the power of the Holy Spirit. He's just using me as a vessel to provide healing, forgiveness, and redemption for fathers who are broken after abortion.
Wow. When we talk about fathers in this situation being broken, one can't imagine that it's even more on the ladies who commit this abortion. And I want you to speak into that, because there might be people listening to us who might have had an abortion and they're struggling. Tell us, first of all, what happens, you found, that generally happens to the women who commit abortion, the kind of things they go through, the trauma and all that. And then after that, I will ask you to speak to the ladies who might be in that situation.
Well, traditionally and normally, it's a few years before they feel broken and seek help. Others, they are broken and seek help immediately. But Satan whispers in their ears and tells them that they've committed a sin that is unpardonable. And if the churches don't speak out and let people in the pews know that there is forgiveness and hope,
even if you've committed abortion and killed a baby.
Yeah, but put yourself in their shoes. There is no sin that could be greater, more egregious than that of killing your own child. And so I understand why they think they can't find forgiveness as a result, but the church has to stand up and say, yes, there is forgiveness no matter what you've done. Abortion is a terrible sin, but you can be redeemed, because when Christ said it is finished on the cross, he died, and for every sin, what we call the big sins and the little sins, he died for the sin of abortion.
Amen.
Even if you have several abortions in your past, there is forgiveness and hope.
That's powerful. That means if somebody's listening to us here now, and she's somebody who is under the weight of the guilt, maybe even so broken that she feels there's no hope for her in God, and running away from God, you are saying, let's remind her that, look, there is forgiveness, even for multiple abortion. And God forgives, God redeems, God changes. That's the power of the gospel. Let's come back to the USA and the recent victory of the Roe versus Wade. Where were you the day you heard the news? I know there was a leaked version, then finally people thought, maybe now that it's leaked, maybe the judges are going to paddle back.
Yeah.
I mean, I was following the whole thing. Maybe they're going to say, no, that's not what we meant. And then, but they finally stood their ground, and the news came out that this decade-long, I mean, 40-plus years long law.
49 years.
49 years long law had been canceled and removed.
Yes.
Now, you tell me, first of all, where you were that day and how you felt, and then tell us the implication of this historic event.
Well, my wife and I were at home. It was an evening. I think it was a Monday evening. Word came out. My phones exploded with emails. Have you heard? Have you heard? And a leaked document with the Supreme Court is unheard of. It's unprecedented.
Okay.
So first of all, my first reaction was to find out, is this true? Did a document leak? What was the document? And is it credible? And it was yes to all of those questions. Even the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court then came out and said, yes, that is a credible document, but he didn't say whether it was the final document or not. We just don't know. But whoever released it was doing an act of intimidation.
Okay.
To try to get the Supreme Court justices to change their vote, and it didn't work, of course. And then 30 days or so later, we got the document in its final form, and it was exactly as the leaked document. So we knew that an era of blood and tears was coming to an end eventually.
Millions of babies.
Yes, millions of babies. And we realized that the work was really beginning in earnest, because now the battle goes to the states, where state by state, we do battle to pass legislation protecting the babies. Plus, we have to also continue to try to pursue federal legislation to protect babies, because we can't save babies in the liberal states of New York or California or Illinois, because they have such liberal legislatures there, such godless legislatures. Although I have a friend who's the chairman of the Senate there in Illinois, who's a devout Christian. But in order to protect those babies, we have to pass federal legislation. So when people are saying that we can't do that. We can't overcome the blue states that have permissive abortion laws. I remind them that a year and a half ago, every state was like that. And now we have gained a huge step to be able to work. And that's why pro-life education is so important, because we can come into a state, regardless of their laws on the books, we can educate the residents of those states. We can turn their hearts and minds toward life and undermine the abortion industry and their supporters.
Mm. Now, you know, that's a very interesting thing to me, this part that we taught when we had that overturning of Roe versus Wade, that it's all over. I mean, this is from the Supreme Court. But it turns out that the law over being overturned was just to say we give this back to the states.
Right.
The states decide. The federal government doesn't have a blanket law. Now each state decides. So it's like later I understood that this is not the end of the battle. It's actually a major victory, but it now goes down to the street fight. You're now fighting.
Yes. Boy, that's an accurate description. And the thought that many people thought it was done worked to our advantage, because some women didn't have abortions. They thought it was illegal in every state.
Okay.
But quickly, information came out that says, no, it's just state-by-state battle. But as I said, that's where our work really begins, and the battle for each state, for each baby, and chemical abortion, of course, is our biggest challenge and our highest priority right now.
I'll talk about chemical abortion soon, but I want us to pause as we look at this victory of the Roe versus Wade, because you've been in this boxing ring for like 40 years or more. So you saw, like you said before, you went to cry sometimes. You knew that the option of giving up was not, there was not an option of giving up. What are the lessons from this victory for us in South Africa? If you look at South Africa and you look at people who are concerned about overturning laws that permit immoral things like the killing of babies, what are the lessons you would say, brethren, brothers and sisters, here are some things you can hold on to from this victory?
Well, I think that every person can make a difference. And Satan will tell you that there's nothing you can do as an individual, and that's wrong. And I want to give you two examples of how that changed. My colleague, Dr. Wilkie, back when Ronald Reagan was nominated, got the Republican nomination to run for president at the convention, he selected George Bush as his running mate for vice president. George Bush was pro-abortion.
George W.H.
W.H., the senior Bush.
Senior Bush was
pro-abortion. So my colleague, Dr. Wilkie, ran over to the convention headquarters, went up to the suite of the convention, and asked to see the vice presidential nominee, George Bush, and talk to him. And he got an audience with him, and he says, I don't want you to come out and say what your position is on abortion. We have a very pro-life presidential candidate, and I want to talk to you about the abortion issue. I want you to be able to tell the people that you spent time with us, gave us that time, and sat for a thorough briefing on abortion. And he said, okay. He said, how much time do you want? He was thinking in maybe 20 minutes, an hour. Jack asked for 4 hours. And he got it. He got it.
That, wow.
That was a God thing. And he told him, he says, well, we need to present to our movement that you are open-minded, that you are willing to listen to that. So Jack went to his personal residence in Kennebunkport, Maine, and briefed him. You know, I described the presentation I gave to my students.
Yeah, back then in high school.
That's the presentation he gave to the vice president candidate. And afterward, when he was all done, he says, now, Mr. Bush, I want you to tell me what your position on abortion is. He kind of chuckled and he said, you knew what you were doing. He said, I wasn't there, but I'm there now. I support a human life amendment to the Constitution.
Wow.
And he was very supportive of the president. We could promote a totally pro-life ticket, which helped immensely. And then as George H.W. Bush went on to be president, he signed every piece of pro-life legislation we sent him. When he needed to veto something, every time we asked him to veto a pro-abortion bill, he did so. Mm. So that was a huge, huge victory of one person stepping out in faith to educate another. That's where pro-life education comes into being.
Now, you're actually talking about strategically influencing leaders.
Yes, yes.
In the background, even before they become extremely prominent, or when they're prominent or whatever. So there's a battle to be fought, not just educating the public, but also intentionally educating leaders.
Yes, and as you see somebody who's a politician climb up the ladder of success, you want to get them at the bottom rung of that ladder and educate them, and they are not going to fight for life. They won't have the fire in the belly and in the heart unless they've been briefed to understand what abortion does to babies and mothers and fathers. And once they do, then they become a formidable ambassador for the babies. And I want to tell you about one other incident that was very important. Supreme Court justices, as I mentioned during my talk, were critical to overturning Roe. Mm. So when George W. Bush, the son of former President Bush, was in office, there was an opening to the Supreme Court. And word was he was going to nominate somebody from his administration, Alberto Gonzalez, who wasn't pro-life.
He was pro-abortion.
Yes, yes. And I was part of leadership of bringing together pro-life leaders four times a year in Washington, D.C. for meetings. During that meeting, we had somebody from the White House that morning brief us on a matter, the Supreme Court nomination. And I stood up and I said, sir, I am absolutely a fan of George Bush, the president. We support him. But we will not support Alberto Gonzalez because he is pro-abortion. And immediately the whole room of pro-life leaders stood up and applauded that comment.
Wow.
It made a very powerful statement. Then in the afternoon, another person from the White House came to brief us on another matter. But before he did, he says, boy, he said, when so-and-so came back from your meeting this morning, the whole talk in the White House has been how you oppose Alberto Gonzalez for the Supreme Court. Gonzalez did not get the nomination.
Wow.
Samuel Alito got the nomination, as was confirmed.
He's there right now.
Yes. And guess who authored the opinion overturning Roe?
Samuel Alito.
It was Samuel Alito.
So, and he stood his ground even with the leak.
Yes. So, you know, as an individual, we may not understand the power of the moment, but we need to take every opportunity. And sometimes that's hard, to listen to the opportunity that God gives us to stand up for life and be an ambassador for the babies.
Let's talk about chemical abortion. It's exploding in the black market in South Africa. It's marketed as the easy. Tell us a bit about what it is for the person who doesn't know, the uninitiated. What is chemical abortion? How does it work? And what are the lies that are told? And what is the truth?
Yes, a chemical abortion is a two-pill protocol. The first medication is mifepristone, and the second is misoprostol. Now, that there's two sounding similar words. So the way I remember them is mifepristone is like stoning the baby to death. Mifepristone kills the child in the womb, and then misoprostol causes cramping in the uterus and expels
the child,
baby.
Yeah.
And it is a very painful, it's a very bloody, and it's a very dangerous procedure, four times more dangerous than surgical abortion. And now the FDA is being sued in America because they approved it under political conditions that did not support the science. And now we have the same situation as you have in South Africa. Pills are being mailed into states where unborn babies are protected. They are not, the contents of those pills are not guaranteed. We don't know what's in them. We don't know what they'll do to the women and their babies. Oftentimes there are no directions on what they do to the women. Women are told it's a natural, almost painless process, and it's not a baby. When she experiences chemical abortion at home, she has a great deal of pain. Women who have children say it's the same pain as labor. And there is so much bleeding that goes with this. And then they pass the child, often in the toilet, and then they see that child. So they know they've been lied to. It's not natural. It's not painless. It can be a gory, terrible situation. And worst of all, they see the baby
that's been killed.
And the abortion is on them. It's not on the abortionist because they took the pill and they took it in their own home. So every time they walk into the bathroom or into their bedroom where this played out, they are triggered and reminded of the death of their baby. The emotional burden women carry as a result of chemical abortion is so much more severe than surgical abortion.
Now, the lie actually here is that women and ladies are being told, you just get these pills, it's far, far, it's less dangerous, it's so easy, you take these pills and you expel the tissue. Mm-hmm. And you are saying that this is a lie that's being communicated, creating a market for whoever is creating this pills, but leaving women not just killing a baby, but devastated in a deep way for life, even more than surgical abortion.
And I would encourage women to go online and search for the stories of women who have experienced chemical abortion, listen to them, and hear what they have gone through, and know that they've been sold lies for the sake of the abortion industry that makes lots of money selling those pills.
Tell us the website of you, because I watched two of your interviews, just clips of it, and I think it'll be, I was just teared when I listened to these two women. And I think for our listeners, whether you've been involved in abortion or not, just to be educated, go to this website and look for the link that that Brad will give us now and click on it. Even if you're not, you know, you're a grandparent, whatever you are, Christian, you're not involved in abortion, or if you're contemplating abortion, these stories will really educate you. Brad, tell us the website and what we should click when we get there.
Sure. The website is lifeissues.org, lifeissues.org, and do a search for chemical abortion. We have tons of information on that one page, and at the top of that page is a video, a documentary we did called A Closer Look at Chemical Abortion. It will educate you on what chemical abortion is, the side effects. I interview a physician who talks about them, and then I interview two women. You saw clips of their testimony, and it is absolutely heartbreaking what these women went through, the lies that they were told, but also it's about redemption of how they can seek forgiveness and become whole again.
You want to go and watch those videos. I've seen clips of it just today, and I tell you, they would educate you. It would also help you to understand some of this issue better, but also the personal story of these ladies that are in this documentary. So it's lifeissues.org, and you search for chemical abortion, and you'll get a video that will come up. You look at that. Brad, let's talk about here in South Africa. I mean, you guys are way ahead over there, and you've already given us tips of what should be done and all that. When you look at the country, and I'm asking this question because this is not your first visit. You are part South African now.
I am. Proudly so.
Yes. Amen. Okay. Now, you have an idea of the landscape, and you have an idea of what the pro-life people here are doing. And what would be your, how would you encourage us about, you know, I want you to be specific now. Like, look, You're talking to individuals. You're talking to churches. You're talking to pastors. You're talking to whoever is hearing us. Can you in depth tell us what to do?
Well, education is the most important tool you have in South Africa to stop this scourge on women and babies. And you can go to our website. You can get educated on what this pill does to women, what it entails. And then it's important that you share this information. Go to your church. Go to your pastor. Go to your neighbors. Go to the people you work with. Share this information. For those that don't believe you, send them to the website to listen and watch the women who have experienced the pill themselves. Pro-life education is the best tool you have as women contemplate this abortion. Keep an open line of communication with those who may not agree with you on abortion, who may say they want to get the pill. Talk to them, and even if they reject your advice and take that pill and kill their baby, you need to be there to share the gospel message for them afterward, regardless of what their decision is. But house by house, church by church, working place by working place, look for every avenue to share what you've learned on chemical abortion, and you will be surprised how hearts and minds can be directed and changed for life.
So education, pro-life education, is the key. It's more than anything else. Like, and he's told us that, Brad, you're saying there's so much resource on that website, lifeissues.org, that a church can pull up, an individual can pull up. And the second thing you added is love. That means with all the education, you might get a backlash. You might have people who don't care, and they make wrong choices. Even then, love kicks in. So it's education and it's loving. And with that, we can make great changes, even as individuals. Brad, what would be your last word as we wrap up? Because you've given us so much we can chew, and I know the listeners have been seriously blessed. What would be your last word? We didn't get to talk about your family. I mean, we've been so focused on the issue. Tell us a bit about your family before you give me your last word. I know you're a grandparent. You're a father of four children?
Yes, four sons. We've been married 43 years.
Wow.
We have four sons who are all adults. Two of them are married. And 2 weeks ago, we found out grandchild number 6 is on the way.
Wow.
So we are very pleased about that. But the message to people listening is certainly educate yourself and educate others. But if you have an abortion or multiple abortions in your past, reach out for help. Abortion is too difficult to walk through by yourself. You need somebody to walk that path with you. We can put you in contact with a peer-to-peer counselor who will, for no charge, walk through that path of hope and healing for you. And you don't have to suffer alone. You are not alone, whether you're the father or the mother of that baby. There are many just like you who are searching for answers, struggling with grief and shame that abortion brings, but Satan keeps whispering in your ears that you are unworthy, that your past history makes you unworthy. When Satan reminds us of our past, we need to remind Satan of his future.
And his, I love that.
His future is very bad indeed. And when we reject Satan, as scripture tells us, Satan flees. So wrap yourself in the full armor of God, stand for justice and truth, and be prepared for the arrows that will come from the other side, the spiritual arrows and those who oppose us in the political and legislative realm.
Thank you so much, Brad, for sharing so much with us today. And I just want to reiterate what Brad just said now, that you're listening and maybe you've gone through this whole issue of abortion, maybe even multiple abortion, don't just stay there. Reach out. You can use the number at the end of the show. Brad has already said you can reach out to them through the website, which is lifeissues.org, and is going to be able to connect you to free counseling. You can use the number at the end of the show. Maybe you're at a point where you're thinking there's no hope for you. And we're saying there's hope for you in Jesus Christ, no matter what you have done. You don't have to live in shame. You don't have to live in guilt. You don't have to kill yourself. Jesus died for you. Please contact us with the phone number that will come at the end of the show. And just say you need help. And we'll find a way to rush help to you. Thank you so much, Brad, for today. Thank you for coming to South Africa over and over again to help the church here. And it's been so wonderful talking with you today.
Well, it's my honor and privilege and joy to be back in your country. When people ask me, what is your favorite country? Because I've traveled to a lot of them. I quickly say South Africa.
Wow. Yes. Wow. Well, what do you like most here?
Oh, the people are incredible. They're joyful. They're helpful. They're spirit-filled. And it's just a place that is like none other. And when you leave South Africa, you leave a piece of your heart here with them.
So you've had such great commendations from Brad Matthijs, and he's here visiting. He's the president of Life Issues
Institute
in Florida, and he's a man who has just poured out so much wisdom to us today, and we're so glad that he could stop by and have this conversation with us on Let's Talk. Thank you for joining us this week. We'll see you same time next week. Bye for now. Bye.